and welcome back everyone to the Research VR Podcast, the podcast behind the science and design of virtual reality. Today, we are joined by special guest Sean Whiting, the community designer of Rec Room. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Great to have you here. And of course, beaming in from Germany, not so far away from me now, we have Mr. Peter Luckoff.
Hello, everyone. I'm having one of those Ready Player One moments where we're in VR, but yeah, it's we'll come to it.
I mean, it's not that different from typically. Today we are, however, Rec Room. Yeah, this is a little different. Mm-hmm. Things look a little different from the last time we've been in here. We've talked about Rec Room quite a bit in the past when it comes to social VR. So today we're going to be talking a good amount about the design of like what built this app. What were the kind of the foundations of why it was built? We also want to talk about kind of the what's the state of social VR today, and kind of how do people interact in virtual reality, and has social VR been a success? So there's a lot to unpack. So thanks for being here, Sean.
Sure. Yeah. Glad to talk about it.
I guess we can start with how did you find yourself within the realm of like virtual reality? Were you working in the games industry before, or in the tech industry, or what attracted you to the space?
Yeah, so I was taking some like graduate level classes at Virginia Tech after I got my undergrad degree in film, and I'd been working on like a video production company for a while myself, just shooting like videos for people. And then I met up with Hayden, who also has a long history in social VR stuff. And we met at Virginia Tech, and we started just hacking around on a DK1. I think Hayden got one first, and then I got one shortly after that. We were like some of the only people at Virginia Tech that seemed to be into VR. So we just started, messing around with different projects, and we quickly found that the most compelling things were stuff with other people in them, like network things where you were looking at, another person. And, in the DK1 days, it was pretty much just like a head tracked cube, right? Like it was very simple stuff we were messing with, but we were still like, oh my God, it feels like, I'm in a room with you because I can see like your head movement. I have a sense of like eye contact, even though it's just like a gray cube. So we were like, well, this is interesting. And we went on to work on a project called Converge for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then we each went a separate direction after that. Hayden went to Big Screen and I went to Pluto VR, each of them working on a social VR product, or at least like a people in VR product. And then I went on from Pluto to join Against Gravity and work on Rec Room. And Hayden went on, and he's now at a company called Insight VR in New York, and they do kind of like networked meetings for design and architecture purposes or clients. It's kind of more of an enterprise thing, but there's still like a very heavy kind of like social presence component to it while you're discussing or like looking at all these AutoCAD designs that you're pulling in.
It's funny how many different directions you can go with having multiplayer in virtual reality, whether that's something like Rec Room, where it's kind of a social experience in the game, versus Big Screen, where it's a kind of a productivity focused, multiplayer experience, versus Pluto, where it's much more enterprise focused, kind of meetings and conversations. What did you see that happening in the beginning, or were you able to, I guess, foresee that with Converge and thinking about what could be the future of social VR in the future?
I never really thought about it this way, but like the more you describe all the different applications, the more you're essentially just saying like, isn't it crazy that you can network VR experiences? And it's like, yep, you can bring like multiple clients together on a server and like they can see each other. It's just, you've got the added, factor of depth perception and eye contact and like an avatar representing you rather than like a text string and messenger chat or, text messages. So it's like, it seems silly to think about it that way, but it's like, well, yeah, there's going to be thousands of different applications of like being with other people in VR. And I think we've seen that, right? Like, you watch all of the, like, every VR, AR, XR company has their kind of like networked product, right? Like Magic Leap's like, look, you can hang out with other floating avatar heads while you're doing Magic Leap stuff. And HoloLens is like, look, wouldn't it be crazy if you could scan in your whole room and your whole person? Like, they all have these projects where they want to make that a reality. Right. Everyone sees the potential in that. So yeah, I think we saw that early on as well. Even in the like developer kit days, there are a bunch of people hacking on a bunch of different crazy things. We actually started out by working on the, Hayden and I did a bunch of experiments around the Microsoft Kinect device, where we would use like the Kinect V2 and it would like scan all of our, you know, point cloud data in, and you could reconstruct it and texture the mesh, and it kind of looked roughly like a, you know, holographic human. And we were like, whoa, this is crazy cool. And then we were like, well, who's going to buy a like additional $150 peripheral and set it up? And it was like, well, probably not that many people. So we went from that to like Converge, which is pretty much like, we went from like the like most additional hardware required, like, you know, it's hard to say high fidelity experience because they've stolen that word. So we went from the highest fidelity level experience to like the lowest fidelity level experience with Converge. We should have called it low fidelity. It's just floating heads, but it worked really well because it ran so smoothly. We had like a low poly world. So yeah, I don't know. I've seen a lot of different things. And
so maybe a question from my side. Would you say that overall humans would rather like to live in a comic? And with a comic, I mean, for example, the room we are right now, everything looks very nice and I don't have any uncanny valley effects and I enjoy it, but it is a comic world. Or do you think people want to live more in the real world but have like comic figures running around? So probably the question could be also phrased like, do you think it will be AR with augmented reality with some floating avatars in real space, or fundamentally more like Rec Room where we are right now?
I think for like where the market's at right now, I think something like Rec Room will have a much better chance. Like, I think the move to get to like a ubiquitous, you know, mixed reality future is a lot further out. Like, if you read something like Rainbow's End, where it's like they're holographic humans and they're just part of society and location doesn't matter. I think that's a social acceptance timeline that's much longer than like I can put on a VR headset and hang out with you and I'm cool with that. Yeah, I think bringing like volumetric digital humans and information into the real world, especially given the hardware you're going to have to be wearing to make that happen and how people are going to like perceive you while you're wearing that hardware and you're talking to someone that's not there because it's not ubiquitous yet, like that's a lot harder of a social challenge to overcome than like I put this on alone in my living room and I'm hanging out with thousands of people all over the world, which is the Rec Room problem we have to solve. Is like, can we motivate you to put on a headset and like share a crazy game and experience with these people? Like, that's a lot easier in my mind than like, will you buy these potentially $1,000, you know, glasses and then walk around the street and talk to your buddies? Like, that feels like a much further out problem to solve to me.
Right. And I guess before we go off way into the future, what were the initial motivations behind Rec Room? I guess you joined pretty early on, but I'm sure you know kind of what were the founding principles. Because actually, let's also paint the picture of what it was when it or what existed when it came out. I don't know if Converge was still you know, if the servers were still up and running, but I believe Altspace was around. Converge was right around there. Maybe perhaps High Fidelity was as well, which were all kind of social VR experiences that I'm sure most of our listeners know. But yeah, maybe let's figure out what it was in 2016.
Yeah. So when the company was started, the emphasis was very much around kind of like the Wii Sports of VR. It's like people should be able to hop in, meet friends, and then like play games with those friends as a kind of like social lubricant to like lead to friendships, which leads to, you know, you come back to hang out with your friends because it's a compelling experience in VR to like be present with people like we are right now. So that was certainly the like how everything started. And then it kind of evolved over time into we started adding more and more creation tools on top of it, because people are like, oh, I love paintball, or I love whatever my game is in Rec Room. People kind of latch on to certain games that become their favorites. And they're like, oh, but I really want to modify it. Like, I'd like to like change this level or like change the gameplay a little bit. So that led to the creation of like the Maker Pen. So the Maker Pen allows you to like create objects in your space. And we have a kind of like visual scripting language called Circuits, where you can kind of pop a circuit out of the Maker Pen and then connect it with wires. And using circuits, people have done some just like in, like crazy things that we didn't think would ever be possible. So yeah, that's kind of shifted the way we think about Rec Room now. The way we think about it now is like Rec Room is a global social club where you can create and play games with friends. So that's kind of the way we've evolved to think about it, is it's much more of a creation space where, you know, you're creating whatever room or world or thing you want to do. And we've seen people do a lot of stuff. Like, we've got people that run talk shows in here now. So like every nice. Friday they'll come in and do a show. There are a lot of art rooms are like a very popular thing. So people come in and just like start drawing art or doing sculpture art with each other using the Maker Pen. We've seen a lot of escape rooms. People design really interesting escape rooms with circuits. So it's like, when I grab this object and place it like in this place, like a giant stone wall opens up and then like spooky music starts, because we've got the sound chips that you can place. So people are crafting like entire narrative experiences. There's some very like emotional ones where people are like, you know, they're kind of like laying out an experience they had in real life and they're like taking you through it. We have holotars, which are like holographic recordings of yourself. So we have a bunch of like voice acting and kind of like non-player characters, essentially, that players have recorded that'll like, as you approach a desk, they'll pop up and they'll like offer to sell you something. So the level of experiences that people are creating now, that's kind of how I see Rec Room's evolution. Is like, it started with our first party games, but it's quickly becoming like a creation space for people to make an experience, like essentially whatever they want.
One question, isn't the difficulty of the application becoming more and more the more you add? Is it an issue or?
Yeah, it definitely adds a lot more like testing. You know, each platform we add is another platform we have to test against. Every creation tool, the number of like player created rooms is now in the hundreds of thousands. So it's like every time we release an update to any of those creation tools, we're like, well, we hope we don't break anybody's room. So we do a lot of like testing where we will load in some of the player rooms and hop in them and be like, well, let's see how the like changes we made to the Maker Pen objects or the circuit systems. We don't want to, you know, break anyone's room. So we try to move things along in a way that will like upgrade previous and saves for people.
And Rec Room, you guys support Rift 5, PSVR, and now desktop 2D version as well, right?
Yeah. You can hop in on your PS4 without a headset, and you just use your DualShock controller, and then you can hop in via Steam. You can also hop in via Oculus Home, but it makes less sense, like why you'd want to launch Rec Room through Oculus Home to play in 2D. Like, I guess if your headset's broken or something, you could. But most of the desktop people we see play come in through Steam, or especially PS4.
Right. That's actually a topic. Let's definitely get into that in terms of the how the dynamics play in when we have 2D players, and I guess if it's a necessity or not. But I want to go back to something you said earlier on, where the beginning was that you wanted to create Wii Sports but with friends rather than, you know, let's create the metaverse and then have it be populated by people who want to build their own things. I think that probably set a very that core differentiating factor probably set you on a totally different path than other social VR experiences that we've seen. And I'm curious to know how you think that affected kind of the success of Rec Room in growing, you know, past a certain critical mass of users.
Yeah, I think it was the right path to take, because it forced us to focus a lot on like, do you want to spend time in this space, like full stop, like regardless of any creation tools or anything anyone else has made, is like, can we as you know, like pretty competent developers make something that is compelling enough for people to come back and like they have a friends list that they want to hang out with and they identify with their avatar. So that was kind of like the first problem we wanted to solve. And once we saw that that was like a compelling offer for people and we had like a small amount of people that loved it, I think you can go from there and like start scaling up into, well, now we're going to like let the community start to take over and like using that base layer you've created, they'll like literally build a bunch of rooms and experiences on top of it. But by doing that, it forced us a lot to, you know, think of all those basic interactions, right? Like, how do you navigate your menu? It's like, well, you've got your rec room watch and you can do everything in here. And like, what are the social interactions like? It's like there's a lot of high fives in the rec center and public spaces, right? And like shaking hands to make friends and fist bumping to party up. And I think a lot of people appreciate like the essentially like the social design of, you know, how you're interacting with people. The rec room faces I always find really compelling, like the fact that they change and like as you talk the mouth moves and all that sort
random?
Of stuff. What's
is
that
it random? Is it random how, you know, the mimic changes, or is it somehow detecting whether I'm happy or not?
So you can trigger it by some stuff using the microphone, like as I talk it'll trigger my mouth to move. As I do certain gestures, it'll trigger things. Like if I lift my hands over my head, I know we used to have one where it would show like, you know, a victory or like a smile. I'm not sure if that one's still hooked up. We have one where like when you get your heads really close to somebody else, it does a kissy face so that when you're taking a photo, it does that.
Clever.
If somebody throws like a dodgeball at your face, you get the like X, like the crossed eyes, you know, like you've just been hit in the face or something. So there's quite a few of the like facial expressions that are hooked up to things.
Well, I think the whimsical nature of the interactions really set. I remember my first experience with Rec Room was, this was right after, I keep referencing this, but like it was probably a month or two after Google I/O 2016. And this designer that I'm a huge fan of named Manuel Clement, he... or the whole Daydream interaction team had done this like 20 week long sprint where every 2 weeks they would come up with a new kind of game jam idea and create these things. And they really, during Google I/O, they came out and they talked about like, if you want to create a multiplayer experience, give those two people like a ball, give them something to do, give them hands, give them eye contact, and then also give them a way for their body language to really, even if they don't have mics, for them to be able to communicate that well. Mm-hmm. And I remember when Rec Room came out, I think it must have been a month or two after that, like, I don't know if they were inspired by any of those talks or were just thinking along the same lines, but even just something as simple as the high five having sparkles fly out of the hand really created, here, let's do a high five, Peter. Nice. You feel it and you also see it, and it really created this the sense of, oh, okay, we just did something here. And that combined with a real game mechanic, which like to party up or something, like I think that worked, I'm sure, quite well. And that was a very early feature compared to what all the advanced stuff that's been added on now.
Yeah.
What do you think about kind of that as a concept?
Yeah, I remember seeing all those experiments. It was really cool. It was like very quickly prototype things, and then they would like publish a little blog on it or like a Twitter post. I really like that project. It made me think of the first time a lot of people go into the rec center, since the rec center is kind of our like primary social lobby, where straight from your dorm room, like you can go and hang out with other people. And we had to add a voiceover line to let people know that, like, hey, these are real people from all around the world. Because people's intuition is like, whoa, look at all these, like, bots or, like, robots hanging out in here. And we're like, oh, no, those are real people. Like, you've got an open mic right now. Like, there's a mic built into your headset. I don't know if you know this. So we added a voiceover that's like, hey, welcome to the Rec Center. You're now playing with people from all around the world. And, like, you can hear them and they can hear you. So, like, you know, be excellent to each other, essentially. I think it can be hard for people to like understand what that is the first time, because it's like it's a new social kind of like paradigm you're entering into, right? Where you're like, well, I kind of roughly know how to interact with people online in text, but like I've never like walked into a virtual space. A lot of people haven't, and then know how to like interact with people there. Like, you don't know what the social norms are. You don't know what the gestures are. So it becomes a lot easier when you're doing something you understand. So like the whole Rec Room universe is kind of based around being at like a university, right? So you're like, oh, I'm in my dorm room. This is my private space. I can like, you know, change my avatar, get dressed, hang out in here in privacy as much as I want. And then I can go out into like the social space. And once you're immediately in there, and this is what made me think of what you're talking about. Normally there's somebody like playing basketball, right? They're like shooting hoops. Or they're like throwing a frisbee around or like playing with a water bottle. And when somebody in there like throws the frisbee at you or like a ball rolls up to you and you pick it up, that's when I think people's mind make that connection of like, oh, someone like took some action and now I'm like participating in it. And there's this like physics object and we're throwing it back and forth. It's like very common that the first thing you do in Rec Room is like catch a frisbee or walk up and shoot a basket. And then people are like, oh, let's play a game of horse. And it's just like your brain's like, I know how to do this. And then you're laughing and you're having a good time and you're making friends. So I think that has a lot to do with the kind of success of Rec Room as an app.
Yeah, that sounds like the same affordances of like what a playground is like with between kids. It's mm-hmm. when you do have the ball, there's almost no way of those two kids not to interact somehow. And then even if they don't speak the same language, like have a very real connection
right.
immediately.
Yeah.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what a social designer, mm-hmm. Community designer kind of does. Like, how do you approach tackling some of these problems, and perhaps how do you approach creating the rules for a space? You know, there's different rules if you are in school or if you're in church or if you're at work.
Yeah.
And these are rules that aren't really written down, but are created because of the interactions between people. I guess that's always been something that we've referenced, but it's, we don't really have the rule. We don't have like the guidelines of like, okay, how do you create, if you want this sort of behavior to be allowed here, whether that's good or bad or whatever, mischievous, how do you, yeah, what are the ways you could create those rules?
Sure. So yeah, when I first joined, my initial mandate was kind of like to get all of our moderation and support systems in line. So we built out a lot of stuff there since that time. So some of the things we do is like you need to make it very clear to people up front what the rules of the space are. So we drafted up like a very clear code of conduct. And then in the like beginning tutorial that everyone sees, we present you with like a quick summary of the code of conduct. And then there's some research showing that when someone gives like a positive affirmation of it, whether that's signing a document or like taking any action, like checking a box, it actually like registers a little more in their head that like, I've agreed to this thing. So we added a long button press that you have to do, mm-hmm. like a podium comes up with a button on it that says, I agree. And it's got like a hand shaped thing. So you press your hand into it. So, and then it does like a ding and there's like a particle effect, like anything you can do to attach in someone's mind, like I agreed to this thing. So yeah, we have the code of conduct that shows up when you first come in. So people know like, oh, there are rules, like here are the basic rules. And if I don't abide by those, there'll be consequences. And then, like I said, when they go into the rec center, the first time you see another person or avatar, we remind them like, hey, these are real people. I think Facebook does this too. Before you launch into like venues, they have like a little video that'll run each time that's like, hey, don't forget, these are like people all over the world. And like the things you say will have consequences. Yeah, like I think prompting people with a reminder like that is a good idea, because I think for a lot of gamers, they have this idea of like, I go into this gaming space, my actions don't necessarily matter that much, and then I'll leave, and there's no consequence to that. Yeah. But when you're, you know, physicalized like you are in social VR, there's a lot more consequences to it. Like you can take a lot worse actions against other people. So we put a lot of emphasis on our like moderation systems and how we allow players to report other players, how we allow you to quickly mute and block other people by using like the stop gesture or the point gesture to select them. That's where my like design mind went when I first joined. And since then it's been more towards the kind of like positive reinforcement features. So like once we had the defense systems in place, you start to think like, well, you can't be all defense. You need some like, you know, positive reinforcement. So that's where a lot of the like gestures come in, and the like the cheer system is something we had that we're going to start adding to more here soon. Yeah, the cheer system is you give somebody a thumbs up. So I'm doing it to you right now. And then I will get a prompt to say, hey, what do you want to like cheer this player for? And I'm going to cheer you for being, let's say, a good host. Let's say this is your room and you've like put on a really good show or a party or something. So then you cool. should get a notification that says, hey, Sean cheered you for being a good host. And then as you rack up cheers, you can add badges above your name. So people know like, oh, there's some social kind of like signal here that this player is like known for doing this positive thing. So people like to collect the badges. And pretty soon we're going to add like an additional incentive layer on top of that where you can like earn like exclusive avatar items or like certain things in game. So that'll be like the Cheers 2.0 system that I'm really excited to roll out here at some point.
Go for it, Peter.
Just maybe one question that was bothering me since I entered the lobby today, and I couldn't change my dress when Oz was actually in the same room. I guess you have probably some thoughts that went into like, should you have gender or not? Should you have like the different types of body morphism? I mean, we had a few episodes talking about those issues in social spaces, right? Where, you know, some people get harassed sometimes or not. How did you figure out a system to walk around those things?
Yeah. So the thing you're talking about is actually more of a performance issue. It's that when there are multiple people in your dorm room, and this is new for people, they might not understand, but in typically your dorm room is a totally private area where it was not networked. It was entirely like offline. You weren't able to invite other people in. But recently we did the social dorm update where you can invite other people over to your dorm to hang out. And you can decorate your dorm and save it and kind of like customize your dorm. But yeah, once somebody else enters your dorm, we can't like sync all the avatar items in your dresser, or it just starts to like lag exponentially the more people you add, because they're like all, you know, loading every item in the game. So
right.
the like changing and like customizing your avatar will only take place while there's like only you are in the dorm.
Okay.
And you can save outfits too, like in your watch you can like dress up in a bunch of different things. I think we have like 9 or 10 or 12 somewhere in there like outfit slots. So I've seen people come into a room before and everyone's in like really fancy clothes, because it's like people put on, you know, fake clubs or fake weddings or whatever and stuff. And I've seen someone come in to like a room and be like, oh no, I'm like so underdressed. And then they like bring up their watch and change and they're in like a tuxedo, and then they just, their avatar instantly like, you know, takes on that new clothing. It's a really funny thing to watch.
So I guess to add to that, to also to answer Peter's question, like you guys built the tools to take care of, I mean, you built the social credit system with these badges, but also like blocking systems and muting systems, which I think are like the very bare basics of like any social app has. Like, in fact, like, you know, you saw some of these features in like Halo 2 with when Xbox Live was starting to become a thing, and people are like, oh, like people are can be really mean to each other when they're playing a video game. Like, I wonder what we should do. But I guess the thing that I keep coming back to is like, you have different settings. So whether that's a setting where there's a, let's say a comedian, you know, doing a performance, or someone's doing a performance, versus you're in a paintball game where, you can be, I guess you want to encourage more fun, playful, mischievous things. Like, have you found a way that there's, I mean, does that come naturally to people to understand that this is a place for you to be able to draw in the air and kind of be disruptive, but this is where you should kind of, you know, sit back, and how does that work?
Yeah, we've kind of reinforced over time with people that, like you can do more of like whatever you want. The rules are less strict in private rooms. So like in public rooms, you can't have any kind of like what we would consider like controversial or like edgy content, you know, like really crazy stand up or maybe more like adult themes. We try to keep like most public rooms more family friendly. But then once you move into like, well, I've created this room and I'm inviting people into it, like it's almost anything goes, right? It's like, it's your private space. You can do what you want in it. There's still some rules that apply. Like, you know, you can't be doing something crazy in there, like super illegal, right? But as long as it's like within certain bounds. And these are all like outlined on our like longer code of conduct on the website. So if people are like, hey, I want to do this room, what do you think? We just point them to the rules and we're like, hey, as long as it's within those rules, that's fine. So there's kind of like public space rules or public room rules and then private room rules, if that makes sense.
Yep, it does.
So maybe a side question between, how did you address like, this gender, that some social apps do have, some don't. So in some apps, you can define whether you're male, female, or something else, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't find that button in this application. I don't know if it used to be here or it
no, was there never there. Was one. It all the avatars were
maybe
always
you could
gender
explain
neutral.
What your motivation was.
Yeah, so I wasn't. I don't know if I was here. I mean, that would be like a very beginning decision, and I joined later. But as far as what I've heard from that is like we wanted the avatars to be gender neutral, and we wanted you to kind of like pick how you wanted to express yourself through like hairstyles, clothing. And we do have some clothing that's like more gendered one way or the other. But it's like that should just be a choice you make through what you're going to wear, not like an explicit choice you have to, you know, pick
that's
or
nice.
Like toggle. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to see that becoming a norm across a bunch of different things. And it just, let's just say it's a better future proof system as well, rather than locking yourself into something now. That's fascinating. How, when it comes to like user generated content, was there a point where it felt safe that, okay, if we put these tools out, we're going to start seeing things back, and perhaps how did that play out with you know the amount of people that VR had even in the early days, and let's kind of go into user generated content realm.
It never felt very risky because we had like a strong base of like other like Against Gravity created like first party content there to like always save us, you know. We're like, if nobody creates anything interesting, we've still got, you know, laser tag, charades, paintball, rec royale, like all these things. Yeah, all the quests that people love to play. So it never felt super risky. I guess the risk was like we create these awesome tools and like either the tools suck and no one can create anything because there's too high friction or the learning curve is too high, or there's just like not enough like talented creators in VR and we don't see anything, but neither of those turned out to be true. We pretty quickly saw that people started creating experiences that even though they were simple initially, they like really connected with people in a way that some of our experiences couldn't, because they could be more deeply personal, right? You're like, I really identify with like this like piece of, you know, fandom from this like anime I love, and I'm going to build this room out of it. And we're like, well, we would have never built that room, but it's like found a huge following on Rec Room, right? And people they'll make a room page for it. So we have a webpage called rec.net, and that's kind of like your social hub. All your pictures upload there. You can send, I sent you guys both a friend request this morning using rec.net. So it's where you can take a bunch of actions outside of Rec Room. So people now upload their room like photos there, and they can set a trailer for their room, and it's kind of become like a Steam page of experiences that you can hop in Rec Room. People share that RecNet link around on social media and people can hop right in. There's a play button there that'll like prompt your system next time you log into Rec Room. It'll like take you straight to that room. So what we started to see as we handed people those tools was, it's essentially like, hey, you're now a like game dev or an experienced dev in Rec Room, and we're going to let you share these things you made across all of our platforms. So we kind of think of it as like ease of creation. We want you to be able to create quickly and easily and socially too. I think that's a big thing that Rec Room has, is you can create straight in the app. You don't have to learn, you know, Unity or Blender, all these outside tools. You're like creating with friends while hanging out. And we see a lot of creators spend like, you know, long stretches of time building a room because they're building it with like four other people, and you're just like hanging out, you know, shooting the shit while you're doing this. That's an experience you don't get in a lot of the other kind of like building apps, like across the board, not even in VR, right? Like a lot of these things require you to use an external editor, which can be kind of like isolating, and I don't know, seems like a higher learning curve. So yeah, we think of like ease of creation, and then we think of ease of distribution. So like once you're done making your room, you just hit save and then publish. And now it's out across all of Rec Room on every platform. And we've handled all of the kind of like optimization things. So like it'll run across any platform because we're like taking that room data that you saved and then interpolating it like onto each platform for you. You don't have to like build multiple times. You build once and then it's everywhere. And when everywhere means, you know, essentially every major six DOF VR platform, and then like PS4 and Steam, and you have screen mode, it's like that's essentially hundreds of millions of people now, right? It's like your audience is massive from just a little bit of work.
How does the audience split? I mean, which I guess just from the VR headsets, which one seems to be the most popular for you guys?
Oh, yeah. We definitely see the most activity on PS4. And that's across PSVR users and the screens is actually growing pretty quickly.
What's the ratio?
I probably can't give an exact breakdown. I'll try to send you guys some stats after the show.
Just a rough guess. Is it like 20-80, 50-50, or like 5-95? So
It's not super dramatic.
Okay.
I don't know. I'd have to look into it. It changes like pretty often.
What do you think motivates people to use Rec Room, more in a desktop mode on a PlayStation? They're looking forward to buy a PSVR and just want to try it before, or?
Yeah. There's a decent amount of people that I see on our like subreddit that are like, you know, I tried Rec Room on PS4 because my buddy has a PSVR. A lot of it is like people with headsets start inviting their friends, and their friends are like, well, I don't know. And they're like, dude, you should try Rec Room. And then they try it and they're like, okay, I'm getting in a headset now. So it's just like it's like an entry point for us, right? It's people can try it. It's also a convenience point for people. Like we'll run on a laptop, right? So like if you're, you know, somewhere traveling and you're like, I don't have my headset with me. It's just like an easier point. You're like, well, I don't want to miss this event my friend is throwing, or I don't want to miss this paintball tournament. So I'm going to like play on screen mode. So we've seen a lot of people, enjoy it for access, joining friends in VR. And then there's, you know, a certain number of people that are just like, this is a fun community and I don't really care that I don't have VR. I just want to like voice chat with people and like help build a room because the building tools are also on screen mode. We kind of like changed how they work, obviously, because you don't have the same affordances of a VR headset. But like you can hop in and start helping people build using circuits and the Maker Pen.
Screen mode wasn't something that you guys that was launched from the beginning, but it seems like it was a feature that was added. I think compared to that, to some other social experiences in VR that did have desktop, I'm sure perhaps there's differences in numbers and in the amount of players that are in VR versus not. I guess what led to the decision to having screen be there and I mean, I also followed the Rec Room subreddit, and I remember seeing kind of like the discussions that were happening around there, especially when it comes to some of the gameplay. What sort of challenges started to appear, and how did you end up tackling them?
Yeah, anytime we add a new platform, the existing community always has a little bit of hesitation about it, you know. So once we added PlayStation, people were like, oh, I don't know. I don't know about those PlayStation people. And then you add screens and like the PlayStation people they're like, oh, they're cool. I made like three PlayStation friends. Don't worry about them. They're cool. But then they're like, oh, I don't know about this screen mode, those screen people. And then they make some screen friends and they're like, all right, screen people are cool. So there's always like a little bit of the existing community is just like, we like who we are. You know, we've formed this identity and like, don't disrupt that. But then like most people are like fine with it after a few months. There's always like that fear of change, you know, where people are like, I love what Rec Room is and I don't want it to change. So there is some of that.
How much ownership do people kind of feel? I mean, you said they're decorating their own rooms, they're building the stuff. I guess what you just described is they're really afraid of their kind of their dream world being taken away from them, right? It almost sounds like they're, it's my country here, no immigrants or whatever. Like, it almost sounds like,
Yeah.
Why do you think is it? It's just a powerful... the power of VR itself? Is it the magic that you did with Rec Room, or is it just a combination of them?
I think it's more of a community like consciousness thing. It's like we identify with like the values that Rec Room has set out, and like I think Rec Room has a pretty strong, like, be good to people, like the community is gonna treat itself nice, and like we're gonna interact a lot with the community. There's like a very high touch relationship between AG and the community, and I think they worry that like as more people join in, they're gonna lose that like specialness that it has. And I think we've proven that we can scale that, but I think it makes sense for people, right? They're like, this is the like eternal September problem that the early internet feared as well. They're just like, well, we have the internet, but like once you give everyone the internet, you know, it's going to be a problem. And I think that's a natural thing, right? Like you've got a nice stable community, and then it's like, we're going to add millions of people to that. And then everyone's like, oh no, what's this going to do to like the vibe of our community? It might change it. So I think it's, you know, natural to have that fear.
Right. I mean, is there something you had to do to kind of keep the dynamics of the of Rec Room familiar to people that that knew what it was from the similar systems when you add something as different as a screen mode or PlayStation? And I guess they are the requirements for a VR headset is to have a head like a head 6 degrees of freedom and 2 controllers, correct?
Yeah, so, we need 6 DOF head and hands just because so many of the Rec Room interactions are based around it. You know, if you think of like the bow in the quests or like, you know, dual wielding pistols and paintball, you just need that 6 DOF head and hands.
And also the locomotion. I mean, that was in the beginning, it was, I think, only teleport, and last time I played, I was using kind of, I don't know if you call it natural locomotion, but stick locomotion.
Yeah, we just call it walking.
Walking, okay. Yeah. Makes sense. So were there anything, what did you have to do to kind of ensure that the experience isn't changing too much by adding in a very different platform and in a way that it kind of enhances it rather than disrupts what existed?
Yeah, so the way we try to roll stuff like that out is with a lot of community feedback, because that way they feel more ownership over it. And it's just like, it's just a nice thing to do, right? We're like, hey, you guys have gotten us to where we are. We're going to add this new thing because a lot of people want walking. We know some of you like aren't happy with that, but like, let us show you what walking is, get your feedback on it. How do you feel? And most people, once you take that fear element away where they're like, I don't know what this is, I don't know how to react, and we're like, here, go try walking. Like, anyone in the existing community can go try walking. We're going to do like, I think we, so like you roll it out in a small sample area, right? Where it's like, if you want to opt into this, I think we did the walking experiment first in like a private room that AG created. It was like a branch of Rec Royale where we were like, hey, it's the Rec Royale Alpha and you can walk this weekend. Like, go tell us what you think. And a lot of people were like, well, that's fine. It's not as bad as I thought. Like, it seems pretty balanced gameplay wise. And we were like, okay, great. And then once you've like given them a preview of it, it's way less scary. So like the way we did that with PlayStation was, hey, you can sign up for the PSVR beta, but like we're only going to let the existing community know about it. We're going to like keep it pretty quiet and be like, hey, you guys can get your friends in first. So like send this link around to your friends. So now the existing community is like, oh, all my friends are in, you know, like on their PlayStation and they're in the beta. It's like this exclusive thing. It feels cool. They're having a good time. We're giving feedback. Me and my friends are giving feedback that's like shaping how it'll roll out. So you're like empowering them to like, you know, express the concerns that they have. And then that's going to shape how it rolls out. So we see the like development process is like a huge collaboration with the community. And I think they feel that. And once they've like recognized that that's how we do things over time, you gain a lot of trust, right? So I think that's brilliant. That's how we've done it without really like pissing a lot of people off.
And how will it work out with new devices like the Oculus Quest or maybe the Index or whatever is coming? Are you going to use the same methods or the same strategy, or is just, you know, just going to throw it around?
Yeah,
maybe not so much, right? Because it's not that different.
Right. The Quest, yeah, the Quest won't be as big of a jump, I don't think. So yeah, that one, and I don't think we necessarily have the, I guess we would have the capabilities to say like, you know, Quest people maybe can only go in these areas or whatever. But yeah, I think it's not like the difference between a Quest and a Rift is not that much. So I don't think that'll be that much of a problem.
All right. maybe you could talk about performance.
Oh yeah.
How do you handle that, across everything?
Right. So yeah, we spun up a optimization team inside AG once we started targeting the Quest. And like screen mode as well, and these other kind of initiatives. And yeah, they've just done incredible work. The new lighting update that just went out, we called it Let There Be Lights. And we moved to the new Unity render pipeline. So they have like the scriptable render pipeline that you can use now. So we kind of defined our own kind of like against gravity rendering process. And it's actually like crazy cool because it allows you to place dynamic lights in your rooms. So players now can have like, there's like a hobbit's room where, you know, Gandalf's staff is like emitting a glow and you're going through Moria, and then a Balrog comes out of the cave and he's like on fire and there's just like multiple lights on him. And it's just like mind blowing because previously everything was pretty much baked, right? And you could have like some spotlights in your room, but they were pretty basic. But right, like what we've seen in the last few weeks, people building is insane. And it's actually more performant because it's like a newer like rendering engine that's been out. So it's kind of counterintuitive for people. They're like, oh, we get dynamic lights, like performance is really going to tank, but it actually got way better. So yeah, performance is always something we're working on. And when it comes to Quest, we're probably not going to make everything coming out on it at the same time. There's going to be like a certain number of like AG rooms and then community rooms that make the initial launch. So like we'll be a launch title on Quest. But the art team has been working essentially the last like 6 to 8 months to like have level of detail on every asset in the game, every avatar item, every like base room like this. We're in the lounge right now. So like all of these things need to be reworked by the art team, and rooms that use like way more objects that haven't been reworked yet might come out later. But there's going to be, and we don't know, like it's still happening like right now in the office, right? It's like before launch, we're trying to get as many rooms in as we can. So like I know paintball's definitely making it. I know like the rec center in the dorm is certainly making it. The maker room, which is a room that a lot of UGC like player created rooms are made off of, is making it because it's like a mostly like a blank slate room. So that's that there's very little there to optimize for us. But some of the larger rooms with like way more lighting, like some of the paintball maps, like if you've built a bunch of stuff on top of that, we have to like optimize that map first. So we're like not totally sure what the full suite of experiences is that'll launch with the Quest, but it'll still have like a lot of what people consider the basic rec room stuff.
I love this idea of really not needing to like set in stone everything from the beginning, but to like design, obviously just iteratively as it's coming, as the VR industry is growing, as things are being developed. But in terms of iterative design, like what do you really see, the success of social kind of taking off for these other, I mean, you know, we don't have to talk about specifics, but like what have other experiences not really capitalized on when it comes to social and VR? Like why doesn't it just having a room and having multiplayer really like take off in that sense? Yeah. I haven't been in alt space in years, and that was to me the first transformative experience that I had in VR. You know, I'm sure you might have a similar experience from back in like 2015, 2016.
Yeah. I feel like those experiences capture some amount of people, right? Because like some people just want that pure social interaction. But I think what I've discovered is there's a wider group of people that want like some social interaction plus like a game or like something to do, right? I don't think there's any doubt that just like multiplayer gaming experiences can be a thing that's like sustainable and viable. Like MMOs have proved that, like every major multiplayer game has kind of proved that.
Behind Against Grav were originally game developers, correct?
Yeah, they were doing all the kind of like first party experiences that launched with HoloLens. So it was like it's a bunch of people at Microsoft that were working on HoloLens stuff. And then they were like, well, we've got all this, you know, spatial kind of like computing experience. And I think they saw an opportunity to apply that to a multiplayer thing. So they started working on that.
Do you have a lot of competitors if it comes to, you know, looking what you have achieved versus others? Because, of course, we could say there is alt space. Everyone knows it. I mean, you can just talk to each other. I, for myself, I have to be honest, I find it a little bit strange and creepy to go somewhere where I don't know anyone and just start talking in VR without any games. So I actually like this part. Some people apparently like it, but do you see like Facebook as a big competitor in a sense? Because they might, you know, try to, you know, come and try to eat your pie, right? Or maybe Sony at some point will think, okay, well, you know, this rec room is good. Maybe we should just do it ourselves.
No, they're no? That's first party. I feel like that's always the benefit of a third party is you can support everything and Facebook won't.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't talk a lot about competition.
That's good.
We more talk about like what we can learn from what other people are doing. So it's like Facebook's tried a lot of things, right? They've tried like venues and rooms and spaces and like they've done a lot of social experiments. And it's like you can hop in that and be like, what's good about this? What sucks about this? And then like take that and add it to Rec Room. And yeah, like Rec Room's such a sprawling thing now that it's like anything that works in any of these other apps, we can probably fit in. Or like the great thing now is the community can fit it in, right? Like the community goes and tries a VR app we've never tried. And they're like, oh, there's this really compelling thing that players can do in that. I'm going to build that into my room with circuits or like, you know, like the community can learn and iterate more quickly.
I remembered what I'd forgotten. In terms of like really iterating with your community, how do you, sometimes I'm sure you get feedback that's just like negative on certain feature or something. I think I remember seeing that with, especially with flat, pancake mode keeps coming to my head. Maybe I see it on Reddit.
Maybe you're hungry.
But how do you really balance the feedback that you get? What do you think you should really like follow, and which ones do you stick to your guns to and say, no, this is going to be better for you?
I think a lot of the stuff we look at is like, how persistent is it? Because there's a lot of stuff where it's like an update comes out and people are like, you changed this thing. Like, I'm so annoyed. And then like a week later, they're like, I don't care at all. You know, it's the stuff where they're like 2 months later, or a month later, like, hey, this has still really changed the core experience of Rec Room. And we're like, if we're like, oh man, we might have messed that up, then we'll like revert it, right? But we don't want to be reactive to the community. Like, we don't want to be so reactive that, you know, we're missing opportunities that if we'd let it sit for a while, it would have been fine. So I think it's like, it's a calculation that's like, how dramatic is the feedback versus how persistent is it? Versus like, how much is this thing we rolled out necessary for like where we want to take Rec Room? If it's like, it's not very necessary, we did it as an experiment and the feedback is like super strong over multiple weeks, we're like, well, we should probably revert that. If it's like strong up front and then it tapers off to nothing and it's a feature that we really need for like our future, like to lay for something we want to do in the future, we're like, oh, we're going to keep that because like, you know, feedback kind of fell off. It seems like people are getting used to it. Right. So yeah, we want to be reactive, but not like too reactive.
Has there been any features that you've kind of thought twice about after persistent feedback?
Yeah. I mean, there certainly have. I'm trying to think of a good example of something we've like changed very heavily. I mean, the creation tools, people get really like used to a certain flow of creating. Yeah. So every now and then we'll release like, hey, this is a new way to use the Maker Pen. And then all of our creators are like, no, that's awful. And we're like, well, fair enough. Like, you know, we don't use it as much as you guys do. So like, we're like, well, what if we move it like over here on this tab? Or like, what if we, whoops, I just fired off a cheer. Yeah. Like, what if, you know, we like change this interaction a little bit and they're like, oh yeah, that's way better. So the creation tools get tweaked a lot in ways like that, I would say.
That makes sense. And I'm sure with, working closely with like the power users, it really helps to kind of hone in what it is.
Yeah.
Can I add? I just have two questions that are maybe like more of a type of, you know, devil's advocate. Yeah. One would be, I mean, you mentioned a lot of people's content that they bring in, that they create. And maybe it's my bias living for too long in Europe, but whenever people are speaking about social experiences and content and user-generated stuff, I always thinking, what's with licenses? What's with those horrible laws that are being passed? How do you deal with them? And the second thing would be maybe more philosophically going to the future. I mean, you're giving people a way to build their dream worlds. And the question is, will the servers always be running? You know, will they be running in 20, in 40, in 60 years? Is it something that, you know, the users have sometimes addressed as an issue where, you know, will it be persist? Is it just a dream that will go away or whatever?
Yeah.
Because they bring so much of their soul, you know, their own soul and their own things in it. And, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
So give me the first one again.
The first one was, you know, like, how do you deal with content liability, with copyright, with people bringing their own content or structuring, modeling something? It's maybe...
Or is that even an issue?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have the standard like DMCA takedown thing where it's like, if anybody has stolen your content and brought it into Rec Room, which it's pretty, like, you couldn't literally do that because we don't have a way for you to import assets. Like, I think it's a lot easier to do that in other experiences where you're like building it in Unity or Blender, right? Because you're like, I ripped this model offline or like out of this other game, and now it's just literally in this experience. Like, in our thing, you'd have to like build it from scratch using like blocks and pretty simple shapes in the Maker Pen. So it's like, oh man, it's a bunch of people made the Thanos gauntlet, but like, yeah, they made it from scratch, and like, I don't think anyone's going to really come after us for that. So like, if they want to send us, you know, a takedown notice, they can, and we'll take it out. But I think a lot of it probably falls under like inspired by fandom rather than like, you know, straight up one-to-one, like ripping an asset. So I think that's one reason we haven't had any problems with it. And then there was a second part I was going to speak to.
The second part, maybe the second question was, you know, how is this world that you're creating with your friends together something that will persist or not? Like, do I have to fear if I build something here, just like my safe space, my dream space where I meet with my friends, you know, tomorrow? Well, of course, not tomorrow, but maybe 10, 20 years, the servers will go down.
Sure.
Because it's a persistent trend with, you know, games overall that the servers are being taken down at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, we certainly hope we're around that long, but like, if we aren't, I don't know. Like, I feel like that's a risk you take anytime you build on somebody's platform, right? It's like, is Unity going to be around in 20 years? It's like, I don't know. What if we're basing our engine on Unity, right? Like, that's
true.
A risk we're taking. I feel like anyone building anything kind of takes that risk. Yeah.
You have your own dependencies to kind of...
Right. Like all the YouTube creators, right? Like if YouTube gets shut down or goes down, it's like... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's just a risk. What's that?
Is there this Vimeo... How do you say it in English? Vimeo? Vimeo?
Oh, Vimeo.
Vimeo, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a joke. No one knows it, so...
Yeah, I remember Vimeo. I actually used to upload a bunch of videos to them because they had like better video quality for a while.
Mm-hmm. They're still around, and I mean, it's like quite big on the filmmaking side. People upload their shorts. In fact, DepthKit, which is a volumetric video company, we had a few episodes ago. Vimeo supports actually a way of stream volumetric video through it, which is quite interesting. Yeah,
they also added like a tip jar feature way before YouTube had anything like that, I believe, which was really cool to like support people that made those videos.
Is it something you're planning to do, maybe for the stand-up comedians or the people performing, have some kind of tipping jar or whatever?
Yeah, we do definitely want the future of like user-generated rooms to be something that people can do for a living. So I think if you've been following what's happening in Rec Room with the kind of like economy level stuff, it's like you used to just get packages when you completed a game, right? And you open up the package and it feels good and you get an item. But we wanted to abstract that to tokens at a certain point because a lot of people were like, well, I didn't really want this item. I would have rather just gotten some like value that I could exchange for like this one really big thing I wanted that I have like a super small chance of getting, right? So we started giving people tokens like, hey, I got like 50, 100 tokens. And then I go into the Rec Room store and I've saved up for a week or two and I buy like this super badass item, right? And we're like, people seem to like that more. And then we were like, well, now you can buy tokens. So right now on PC and very shortly on PS4, PSVR, you'll be able to buy tokens with real money. And then you've got like a token balance and then you can buy, you know, items from the AG store using that token balance. And then pretty soon you'll see us add ways for room creators to be able to take tokens through their room. So it's like, hey, maybe I'm running an event and it's going to be 500 tokens to come to this event. Or in my room, it's like I'm playing some game and you can upgrade your weapons, or there's some sort of like in-room, in-app purchase, essentially. Mm. Or, you know, you get some special role in the game for 5 minutes, you become like the whatever. We want to allow players to essentially, you know, like monetize and customize their games however they want. And then once you've got a token balance, you're like, oh man, my room is wildly popular. I'm like raking in all these tokens. Then you can like cash out, you know, so you can take your token balance and convert it back into whatever currency you would want. But that's still kind of in the works. But, you know, obviously for a, you know, user generated content thing to work and to draw that top talent, you need to be able to allow them to like, you know, take value away from what they've created, especially if it's like hugely engaging for the community. Yep.
Right. Oh, this is really fascinating. And I'm really interested in seeing how, or it's interesting seeing how Rec Room has gone from a first party experience generation and creation tool to really relying much more on user generated content. I had followed it from a periphery, but it seems like it's really starting to take off.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of the people that know Rec Room from like the early days where it was just like paintball and early, like our first party experiences, it's been a struggle to communicate to people like how like player creative, like user generated content based it is now, because that's like your initial imprint, right? And like people tend to stick with their initial imprint unless they get a bunch of additional data. So we're always trying to stress like, hey, people are creating some really cool stuff. So we're always trying to share screenshots of the player rooms and reinforce to people like, hey, you should go check out, you know, all those other games and experiences people are making. And one stat I can give you is well over 50% of the total time spent in Rec Room now is spent in player rooms. So we started to see that trend happening. Like, I think it was probably like mid last year. We were like, well, some of these player rooms are getting more time than like our activities. And that was like a very good moment for us, right? Because it proved that like that was a good direction, that creative tools were working, like they're able to create things that are valuable and that are getting like, you know, hundreds of thousands of visits from players.
How is discovery done for the player generated rooms?
Yeah, so it all surfaces in your watch under the play menu. So if you go to play, there's AG activities or like the Rec Room face filter will filter to just like stuff we've created. And then the one immediately under that is the hashtag community filter. So if you select that community filter, it's just going to show you a bunch of experiences that other players have made. And then it's sorted. You've got multiple kind of like browsing options. So the hot tab will show you kind of the ones that are creating the most player engagement. Like, you know, how long are people spending in there? You know, if people come in and leave immediately, it's probably like good signal that the room might not be compelling yet. Mm-hmm. So like once people work their rooms up to be more compelling, they'll surface higher in the list. You've got the live tab, which is sorted by the most players in that experience at the moment. You've got favorites, which is like rooms that you've favorited. And then features.
I also love that there's Nuketown Reborn. Yay for
Food Truck Simulator.
There's been so many iterations of like different experiences. Like there are some creators. I mean, you can subscribe to creators in Rec Room. And some people have like thousands of subs. Like people post on their Instagram, they're like, oh yeah, I hit like, you know, 5,000 Rec Room subs, because they create these awesome rooms. And then whenever they publish a new room, it pings everyone. Like you'll get an email through your Rec Room account. It'll send a push notification on RecNet. And then next time you log in, you'll get a notification in your messages section that's like, hey, Sean posted a new like Lord of the Rings room. And you're like, oh, I love his Lord of the Rings room. So you'll like go visit it. So we want to encourage people to like build a following for their, you know, the stuff they're building.
Interesting.
Yeah, makes sense. And you're also now working on the monetization angle. So it's awesome. Sean, how can people reach you actually and find you? And if they want to ask you questions, and also how can people find out more about Rec Room?
Yeah. So the best place to reach me publicly is probably on Twitter. It's just Sean, S-H-A-W-N, C as in cat, and then Whiting, W-H-I-T-I-N-G. And then if anyone wants to email me to ask more questions, it's just Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at againstgrav.com. So that's my work email. And then for Rec Room stuff, I mean, all of our social accounts are at Rec Room. So Twitter and Instagram is where we spend a lot of time. And then especially our YouTube, we're always putting out kind of like room tour videos or kind of like creation tour videos of like, here's what people created in Rec Room this week. So if you're kind of interested in a quick look at, you know, like, oh, I'm not aware of like the UGC angle of Rec Room, I would recommend go check out, just Google like Rec Room YouTube and check out some of those recent videos. It'll give you like a pretty compelling overview of that. So yeah, those social channels are probably the best way to like follow Rec Room and stay in touch.
Awesome. Yes. And you can find us, the Research VR podcast on Twitter at Research VR Cast. And we're happy to, take people's questions there and retweet things. So yeah, well, we also always like to repost, new developments from previous guests.
Yes.
Anytime that there's cool things happening that would be relevant for especially people that have listened to this episode, we'd typically like to post it there. And we also have a Discord channel. We have our post episode discussions there. We also have guest suggestions there. So, that's definitely something that we encourage people to do. Do you guys happen to have a Discord?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have a very active Discord.
Awesome.
Yeah. If let me know when that like post discussion happens, I'd love to hop in Discord and answer some questions for people.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Sean, for being here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Actually inviting us into Rec Room to check out some of the new rooms. And thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next time.
Goodbye.